Jayam Vishnu Pad, Paramahansa Paravajikacharya, Stotra Sata Shishimara's Divine Grace, Sesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON BB, the founder, Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Gopamanandi, Hari Hari Bo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 6, text 35. Yeah, okay. So I'm going to do the word for word first, so I don't double up. Sa-aham, myself, the great Brahma. Samam naya maya. In the chain of the cyclic succession of Vedic wisdom. Tapa maya. Successfully having undergone all austerities. Prajapatinam. Of all the forefathers of living entities. Abhivanditaha, worshipable. Pati, master. Astaya, successfully practiced. Yogam, mystic powers. Nipunam, very expert. Samahitaha, self-realized. Tam, the Supreme Lord. Na, did not. Ajigacham, properly understood. Yataha, from whom? Atma, self. Sambhavaha, generated. Soham samam nayamayas tapomaya. Soham samam maya. Sorry. Soham samam nayamayas tapomaya. Prajapatinam abhivandita pati. Prajapatinam abhivandita pati. Ashtaya yogam nipunam samahitas. Ashtaya yogam nipunam samahitas. Tam yad sam nadya gacham yata atma sambhava. Tam nadya gacham yata atma sambhava. So hum samam naya mayas tapo maya. Prajapatinam abhivanditaha pati. Ashtaya yogam nipunam samahitas. Tam najagacham yata atmasambhava. Vaishnavis. No takers? Okay. Well, we did the word for word. Okay, so translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Although I am known as the great Brahma, perfect in the disciplic succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerities and am an expert in mystic powers and self-realization, and although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entities who offer me respectful obeisances, still I cannot understand Him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. Purport. Brahma, the greatest of all living creatures within the universe, is admitting his failure to know the Supreme Lord, despite his vast learning in Vedic wisdom, despite his austerity, penance, and mystic powers and self-realization, and despite being worshipped by the great Prajapatis and the forefathers of the living entities. So these qualifications are not sufficient to know the Supreme Lord. Brahmaji could understand the Lord to a little extent only when he was trying to serve him by the eagerness of his heart. Ridot Kant Yavata, which is the devotional service mood. Therefore, the Lord can be known only by the sincere mood of eagerness for service, and not by any amount of material qualification as scientist or speculative philosopher or by attainment of mystic powers. This fact is clearly corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 54 and 55. Brahmabhuta prasanatma nasochati nakankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tad anantaram. Only self-realization by attainment of the above high qualifications of Vedic wisdom, austerity, etc., can help one on the path of devotional service. Now, this next sentence is important. But failing in devotional service, one remains still imperfect, because even in that position of self-realization, one cannot factually know the Supreme Lord. In other words, even you become self-realized still. That's like a, how would you say it? A foothold. You know, it's like a base platform, but you got to go past that. That's what points Prabhupada is making here. But failing in devotional service, one remains still imperfect, because even in that position of self-realization, one cannot factually know the Supreme Lord, period. By self-realization, one is qualified to become a devotee, and the devotee, by service mood, bhaktya only, can gradually know the personality of Godhead. One should not, however, misunderstand the import of vishate, enters into, as referring to merging into the existence of the Supreme. Even in the material existence, one is merged in the existence of the Lord. No materialist can disentangle self from matter, for the self is merged in the external energy of the Lord. As no layman can separate butter from milk, no one can extricate the merged self from matter by acquiring some material qualification. This vishate by devotion, bhaktya, means to be able to participate in the association of the Lord in person. Bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord, means to become free from material entanglement and then to enter into the kingdom of God, becoming one like Him. Losing one's individuality is not the aim of bhakti yoga or of the devotees of the Lord. There are five types of liberation, one of which is called sayuja mukti, or being merged into the existence or body of the Lord. The other forms of liberation maintain the individuality of the particle soul and involve being always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The word vishate used in the verses of the Bhagavad Gita is thus meant for the devotees who are not at all anxious for any kind of liberation. The devotees are satisfied simply in being engaged in the service of the Lord, regardless of the situation. Lord Brahma is the first living being who directly learned the Vedic wisdom from the Lord. Tene Brahma Ridaya Adi Kavaye. Therefore, who can be a more learned Vedantist than Lord Brahma? He admits that in spite of his perfect knowledge in the Vedas, he was unable to know the glories of the Lord. Since no one can be more than Lord Brahma, how can a so-called Vedantist be perfectly cognizant of the absolute truth? The so-called Vedantist, therefore, cannot enter into the existence of the Lord without being trained in the matter of Bhakti Vedanta, or Vedanta plus Bhakti. Vedanta means self-realization, and Bhakti means realization of the personality of Godhead to some extent. No one can know the personality of Godhead in full, but at least to a certain extent, one can know the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, by self-surrender and a devotional attitude, and by nothing else. In the Brahma Samhita also it is said, Vedeshu Durlabham, or simply by studying the Vedanta, one can hardly find out the existence of the personality of Godhead. But the Lord is Adurlabham Atmabhakto, very easily available to his devotees. Srila Vyasadeva, therefore, was not satisfied simply with compiling the Vedanta Sutras. But over and above this, by the advice of his spiritual master, Narada, he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam in order to understand the real import of Vedanta. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is the absolute medium by which to understand the absolute truth. Omegana Timidam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamyena Bhutale Swarm Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Swaparantikam. So, as usual, Prabhupada makes many very important points in this purport. I don't know if I'm going to have the time to address all of them, but I'm going to try to address what I think is maybe the main, most overarching point, which is kind of elucidated by Lord Brahma himself in his statement, which is the translation. Basically, what's going on here is Lord Brahma is expressing his, he's admitting his inability to understand Krishna. He says it. He says, still, I cannot understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. He's admitting it. And he had so many qualifications. We just heard them. He's not being proud. He's not bragging. He's just, you know, saying it like it is. He's perfect in the disciplic succession of Vedic wisdom. He heard right from Krishna. He had undergone great austerities, 1,000 celestial years, you know, and he heard tapa. He went and performed austerities for many, a long, long time. I can't remember the actual length. He's expert in mystic powers, self-realization. It's not that he, and he's saying here, I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of living entities. So basically what he's saying there is saying, it's not like just I'm telling you this. I got witnesses. I got, you know, all these other intelligent people, they're agreeing. You know, this is the fact, this is the case. But he's saying, no, but still, I can't understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. And so basically the point that is being made in that statement, implicitly, and Prabhupada explicitly states it in the purport, is that material qualifications don't get you anywhere as far as understanding the Lord goes. That's not what's going to help. He says, Prabhupada says here, so these qualifications are not sufficient to know the Supreme Lord, all of the ones we just mentioned. Brahmaji could understand the Lord to a little extent, only a little, when he was trying to serve him by the eagerness of his heart. Ridao Kantyavata, which is the devotional service mood. That's it right there. That's the key right there. That's how you understand the Lord, the devotional service mood. Then Prabhupada says in the next sentence, therefore the Lord can be known only by the sincere mood of eagerness for service and not by any amount of material qualification as a scientist, speculative philosopher, or by attainment of mystic powers. Yeah. So that service mood of eagerness. Does anybody know, can anybody quote that verse by Rupa Goswami about how there's only one price you have to pay to get a devotional service? The famous verse by Rupa Goswami, it says if there's... Yeah. Keep going. Yeah, Lilliam. That's I don't. He doesn't know the. He's a bit rusty, and I don't know it at all. Archie probably knows it. But he makes that in that verse. He says, "Lilliam." You have to have like an intense greed. He actually uses that word, intense eagerness or intense greed. That's the qualification for being able to understand the Lord. So this point is very nicely illustrated in a story which appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada also told it in lectures several times. And I'll just briefly, you know, narrate it because everybody's familiar with it. So Lord Chaitanya was traveling South India. He went to Sri Rangam. So he got to Sri Rangam, and the situation was there was a Brahmin there. He was a very nice Brahmin, but he was illiterate. You know, he was illiterate. And the thing was, the spiritual master told him, okay, I want you to read Bhagavad Gita, 18 chapters every day. And I can't remember the detail whether he explained to his spiritual master that he was, oh yeah, it's up there, whether that he was illiterate or not. But anyway, that was the instruction he got, and he was a simple Brahmin, very pure-hearted. Okay, my spiritual master's instructed me this, I got to do it. So he was sitting in the temple in Sri Rangam with the Bhagavad Gita open. I think you hear different versions of this story. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Prabhupada, different lectures. Maybe he didn't even know which way to hold the book. I've heard that in different devotees telling the story. But he was doing it. He was, you know, there and the other Brahmins in the community, they could understand that this is ridiculous. What's going on here? That Brahmin he's illiterate. He can't read. What's he doing? You know, sitting there with the Bhagavad Gita in his hand. And they would make fun of him. You know, they would kind of tease him and like that because they knew he was illiterate. They thought this was a joke, you know. So anyway, he was used to that. He didn't mind. He had that instruction from a spiritual master. So he's determined, you know, well, I got to do this. Whether they make fun of me or not, I have to continue. So anyway, so one day Lord Chaitanya, just as I said, he was, you know, touring. He happened to come to Sri Rangam. And he saw, you know, he kind of saw the whole situation there, what was going on. And, the Brahmin holding the book maybe the wrong way and the other Brahmins teasing him and like that. And so he approached that Brahmin. And he said, Brahmin, what are you doing? And he said, I have the Bhagavad Gita here. So, you know, are you reading Bhagavad Gita? He said, well, not exactly, sir. See, I'm illiterate. So, but I see that you're holding Bhagavad Gita. He said, my spiritual master gave me this instruction. I have to read Bhagavad Gita, 18 chapters every day. So I'm trying to do it, but I'm illiterate. So he says, but wait, I see you're crying. How's that? If you're not understanding, how is it possible that you're... I see, I'm watching you. You're crying as you're looking. He said, well, yeah. He said, because when I see this picture, his copy of the Bhagavad Gita had a picture of Krishna on the chariot with Arjuna. And Krishna was Arjuna's chariot driver. So the Brahmin was saying to Lord Chaitanya, said, yo, when I see this picture of Krishna taking the role of the chariot driver for Arjuna, and I'm thinking how kind the Lord is to his devotee that he's actually willing to take this subordinate position to, you know, to serve his devotee. It brings, you know, makes me, I'm overwhelmed with emotion and I cry. And then Lord Chaitanya could see he was totally sincere, and that was the actual reason, you know, why he was crying. And Lord Chaitanya, I can't remember if he embraced him. Did he embrace him? He embraced him. Lord Chaitanya embraced him, and he said something to the effect that, yeah, actually, you are the real person who's understood Bhagavad Gita. These other guys who are teasing you, we don't know if they know Bhagavad Gita or not, but you have understood Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Chaitanya was completely happy and satisfied with him. See, so there's an example of that. He didn't have the material qualification. Couldn't even read. He was illiterate. What to speak of learned in the this and that. But he had that, the real qualification was he had that bhakti. Okay? So that's a very important point. Okay, so here's the thing, though. That Brahmin had bhakti. Okay? You know, somebody might say, well, okay, this is all very well and good. That's nice, you know. But I don't have the material qualifications. You know, I'll speak for myself now. I don't have the material qualifications, and I don't have the spiritual qualification either. I don't have the bhakti. What's my position? Okay, at least this Brahmin here, he didn't have the material qualification. He was illiterate, but he had bhakti. I mean, he was, and if he was crying looking at a picture of Krishna driving Arjuna's chariot, I would say he was on bhava bhakti. He didn't have just like a little bhakti. He had a lot of bhakti, right? Would that be a fair analysis? Yeah. So he had a lot of bhakti. But what about us? What about us? Once again, what about, nothing. You know, at best, just in the lower stages of devotional service. So what is our hope? What's the hope for us? Okay. Well, there is a hope. There is a hope for us. And here it is. You ready for this? This is a song by Narottam Das Thakur. And this song is entitled, anybody want to guess? This song is entitled Gauranga Karuna Koro. It's a beautiful song by Narottam Das Thakur. And I'll read you the translation. This is the hope. He says, "Oh, my dear Lord Gauranga, please show your mercy to this lowly and destitute soul. Oh, Lord, there is no one more fallen than myself in all three worlds, in all the three worlds. Holding grass between my teeth, O Lord Gora, I am calling out to you now. Please be compassionate upon me and come to reside within the temple of my heart. If you do not give your mercy, seeing how fallen I am, then why are you known as Patita Pavana, the merciful savior of the fallen? I am plunged amidst the violent hurricane-stricken waves in the ocean of this material world, from which there is no escape. Kindly give me this gift of your divine lotus feet, which are compared to a boat in which your servant may cross over the ocean of birth and death. Narottam Das, the servant of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, ceaselessly makes this prayer." This is a beautiful song. Gauranga Karuna Koro Dina Hina Jane Mosamo Patita Prabhu Nahi Tribhuvane. Yeah, I won't sing it because I don't probably know it well enough. But I remember when I heard this song, the first time I heard it was in Mayapur back a few years ago. And I liked it. And then when I saw the translation, wow, I thought, this is it. It's very, you know, it's reminiscent, of course, of the song that most of us are more familiar with by Narottam Das, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Koro More Mosamo Patita Prabhu Napa. That, you know, what Lord Chaitanya, you're the deliverer of the most fallen, so therefore my claim is first because I'm the most fallen. It's reminiscent, you know, the same mood. But, yeah, so here's the hope. This is the hope. This is the hope, what Narottam Das Thakur is expressing here. he's presenting himself. Now, you know, of course, he's a very exalted Vaishnavacharya, but he's presenting himself as a lowly and destitute soul. And he's saying, there's no one more fallen than myself in all three worlds, in all the three worlds. But he makes the point that, okay, but that makes me qualified, that makes me eligible, because he says here, you know, if you do not give me your mercy, seeing how fallen I am, then why are you known as Patita Pavana, the merciful savior of the fallen? So he's appealing logic to the logic, you know. He says, well, this is your mission to save the most fallen. Here I am. I'm the most fallen, so please save me. And this, I heard Vaisheshika Prabhu explain what this holding the grass between the teeth means. He said in India, in the villages, traditionally, if somebody does something wrong, the way they express humility and sort of appeal for forgiveness is they put the straw of the street in their mouth, and then they present themselves in the village, and you know, they basically own up to whatever they've done, and the people have a chance to chastise them, and because they have the straw on the street in their mouth, they can't talk back, they can't defend themselves, you know, they can't say but, you know, they just wear it. You know, and then they take, you know, pay their dunderbats and, you know, beg for forgiveness. So traditional way of asking for forgiveness. So Narottam Das Thakur says here, I am plunged amidst the violent hurricane stricken waves in the ocean. So that's pretty beautiful, a vivid metaphor because, I mean, ocean waves are enough. If anybody's ever been in the ocean, but when there's a violent hurricane-stricken ocean waves, forget it. You know, nobody has a chance of being able to get out of the ocean, even when it's calm. What to speak of when it's violently hurricane-stricken waves that are you're in the midst of. Forget it. There's no escape, as he says here. There's no escape. So what does he do? He says, kindly give me the gift of your divine lotus feet, which are compared to a boat in which your servant may cross over the ocean of birth and death. So practically speaking, what is this? Because this is, you know, we got to, I said, this is the hope. So we got to know really what it is. What is this? He says, give me the gift of your divine lotus feet. So practically speaking, what does that mean? It's the instructions. The instructions of the spiritual master, that's his divine lotus feet. When you take shelter of the instructions of the spiritual master, you're taking shelter of his divine lotus feet. That's our boat. That's the boat. You see? So really have to grab on to that. You have to grab on to the basic things Prabhupada has told us to do. I was just a couple of days ago, I was reading that chapter about when Prithu Maharaj goes back to Godhead. So, you know, if you remember the story, when he saw himself getting a bit older. How am I doing for time? Is money passed? I'll wrap it up. He saw himself getting a bit older, so he decided, okay, time to retire. So he handed over the kingdom to his sons, and he went to the, with his wife, he went to the Tapovana, the forest where you perform austerities. And it was talking about how he was, he would sit in the middle, in the summer, he would sit in the middle of a ring of fire. In the winter, freezing cold winter, he would immerse himself up to the neck in the freezing cold water. He would expose himself to torrential rains. He was sleeping on the floor, ground. He was just sleeping on the ground. He was eating tree bark, etc., you know, and leaves, dried leaves, and maybe some berries or something like that. So Prabhupada, in the point, in his purport, he made the point that, don't worry, you don't got to do that. You don't have to do that. You know, you can't do it. For starters, you know, totally, people in the Kali Yuga are totally incapable of doing that. He said, you have to follow in the footsteps of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. Live in a temple, chant Hare Krishna, follow the regulative principles, and vow only to eat prasadam. That's what Prabhupada mentioned in that purport. It's the first purport of that chapter. So those things. You know, and then of course there's more, but that's starters. You know, that's the base platform. Live in a temple, or be in the association of the devotees. If you can't physically live in a temple, chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds, follow the four good principles, only prasadam. And then beyond that, if you're living in a temple, if you're fortunate enough to be living in a temple, then the instruction there is you have to come to the program. You know, I've heard this Prabhupada say this in like different lectures. You have to get up by 4 o'clock the latest. You have to be at Mangal Arti. I was listening to one lecture the other day where Prabhupada said, I was talking to one devotee, and I told him that if you can't get up by 4 o'clock, you can't live here. You know, he wasn't trying to be mean or anything like that. That's the, you know, these, just like Prithu Maharaj went to the Tapovana, this is the Tapomandir. You know, this is like a mandir. It's for that purpose. But our austerities, fortunately, are not like his. We don't have to do that stuff I described. We just have to get up by 4. You know, you don't even have to take a cold shower. Don't worry if you don't want to. He never said that. But you have to get up before 4. You have to, you know, chant and regulative principles and, you know, prasadam and come to the program and try to engage in devotional service. And that's it. You know, if we do that, that's grabbing on to the lotus, divine lotus feet, you know, and to the, so in those, it's two ways, you know, the giving is getting, you know, it's like he's saying here, give me the gift of your divine lotus feet. Well, you're him giving it, you know, Krishna or Lord Chaitanya is giving it, is part of it is us getting it. We have to take initiative. By doing those things, you're getting the divine lotus feet. Okay. And we can do it. It's doable, you know? And if you think you can't, then you're wrong. And there's a verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Durena hiyavaram karma, buddhi yoga dananjaya, buddho sananamanvichcha, kripana pala hetuva. He says, just, you know, all these conceptions you have in your head, all the stuff that's going around in your head, telling you, I can't do this, or, you know, should do, just throw it away at a distance. Durena hiyavaram karma, buddhi yoga dananjaya, on the strength of devotional service, just kick it all out. Just kick it all out. It's all just Sarvan Partham and Ogatan. You know, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is asking Krishna, what are the symptoms of a person whose consciousness is merged in transcendence? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? And Krishna says, his first thing he says, when a person gives up all varieties of sense desire, which arise from mental concoction, Sarvan Partham and Ogatan, it's mental concoction. And so Dorena, just kick it out. We just have to practice. It doesn't, it's not that easy. You have to work at it. Kick it out, kick it out, kick it out. It's a constant practice every day, all day long, every day. Just practice kicking out what the mind is coming up with, and just keep trying to focus on the instruction of the spiritual master. And if we do like that, then everything works out. Everything works out. Just concluding with just one little example to illustrate this point. You know, recently we started doing ordinary Sankirtan again. And, so it's been a year. And I was a little rusty about just, it's the same thing. We're going out there with books. We're giving people books. But now we're asking for donations again. I was feeling like, ooh, you hadn't done something for a while. You get a bit rusty. And the mind is coming up with all sorts of reasons, objections. Nah, this is not going to work. This is not a good spot. These people aren't receptive. This to really have to do this. And, the usual nonsense. But you just have to go quiet, 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 and keep going. You just persevere. And then if you do that, when you make that decision to take shelter of the instruction, execute the instruction of the spiritual master, you're determined, you make that, okay, I'm going to do it, and you act on that, then the Sankirtan mercy kicks in. You get tested. You go through a period of where it's just kind of you're struggling with your mind. It's telling, no, this is not a good spot. These aren't good people. I don't feel good. And you just keep pushing and doing it. And then when Krishna sees that, okay, he's determined, he's sincere, have a great day. And then the Sankirtan mercy kicks in, and all sorts of far out things start happening. And that same spot that you thought was a really loser spot turns into like Vaikuntha, and everybody starts, not everybody, but a lot of people start taking books, and some people even give nice donations, and before the books are going out and the Lakshmi's coming in, and you're having a great day. So, as I said, I'm just giving that example because that's what I do. But it's like that in any service. You just got to take shelter. You got the instruction and just go for it. It's going to, be some difficulties that mind's going to be disturbed to start off with, but just persevere, push on, and boom, you get the mercy. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah. Such an open. Okay. Just while he's waiting for the mic. So the name of that song is Gauranga Karuna Koro. And you could Google it and you could find it. It's an awesome song. But he had one first and then... Yes, Sachi Noi first, I guess, because he... Yeah, Sachi first. No? Oh, the mic's not working? Okay, well, what's your question? Then I'll just repeat it. Okay. Are you saying it appears like the son knows more than the father? Well, I don't think, probably if you got it, I can't quote you anything, but probably Narada Muni's thinking he doesn't know very much either. In other words, it's the humility. Like even, I think his statements were to the effect that even Krishna doesn't know how all his glories and his energies and like that. So, yeah, that's how they're feeling. That as much as Lord Brahma knows and as much as Narada Muni knows, they know enough to know that they're enlightened enough to realize that, wow, what I'm understanding is just like a teeny little fraction of what is possible to be understood about the glories of the inconceivable potencies and glories of Krishna. So, you know. So I think that's both of them. It's just humility. And, you know, they do know something, obviously, but at the same time, they have that genuine humility to appreciate that Krishna. I mean, I'm understanding just like a drop of a drop. Does that make sense? And Gauranga Prem, that he looked like he had to go. Okay, thank you very much. Gunjo Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.